Possible in part by a grant from RE/MAX Realty Associates, currently handling over 30% of the real estate sales transactions in Champaign County. 352-5700. Nobody sells more real estate than RE/MAX, and they encourage you to join them in supporting public broadcasting. Focus 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Brown Bag Deli Restaurant, homemade pies by Inge, gourmet foods, cards and gifts, as well as creative crafts, Zimmer Art Gallery, Wacky Nackies, the Bean Scene Cafe, and Prairie Fire Glass, all housed in the same buildings in downtown Monticello.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. It's the first Wednesday of the month. It has for a long, long time now been our pleasure and our habit and our tradition, all three, to talk about cooking on the show. Pretty much with the same guy, the man we like to call our chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore, and he's been stopping by here in the program monthly for a long time, and he always picks the topic. There's something he says, I'd like to talk about this, and I'd like to hear how you approach this particular thing. And we have talked about different dishes and styles of cooking from different places around the world and different places in the country. Encourage people to call in if they have questions or if they have recipes to share. And we always have a good time when he is here on the program. And his thought this time around, and it's a little difficult to explain now, was we were interested in this question. Have you recently discovered a new and, you think, good, exciting one-dish meal that involves the oven, involves putting everything together in one dish and baking it, putting it in the oven, essentially? Because we think that a lot of folks nowadays, you know, they like the idea of something that's pretty easy. So one dish meal, that's good. And it's still cool enough so you feel okay about having the oven on. So we're bringing all these things together. And if you have, well, anything you want to say, you can call in, say hello, or you can call in with a recipe or what have you. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Well, I have to tell you now, see, in the run-up to the show, some of my colleagues here have come up to me and said, well, you know, what are you going to talk about? So I try to explain it. I say, well, you see, we're interested in one-dish meals that cook in the oven. And everyone, to a person, said, oh, you mean casseroles?
I said,
no. No, we don't want to use that word. We don't want to use it. Doyle says, no, this is not casseroles. And, of course, everybody I said that to just gave me this blank look like, well, what do you mean? So I guess
They were correct. I'm being obstinate. I mean, because as soon as you say casserole, this is something I learned in architecture school when I was a young student in architecture. If you name something, you have a preconceived idea of what it is. And so that's when we learned that you didn't call it a garage, but you call it an inclement playground automobile storage unit. You know, you give it. And when you do that, that opens up the possibilities to a whole lot more than a can of noodles and some cornflakes on top and pop it in the oven. I mean, you have a preconceived idea when you say casserole, and it generally is preceded by a groan. So I wanted to have the idea that there are so many influences, just an awful lot of influences. I know I've talked about this before, but we're cooking things with an attitude and flavor of the Southwest, and we cook with a whole lot of Asian tastes. And you find this on, you know, I'm just amazed when I'm watching Food Channel. They say, oh, well, here's this dish and this dish. And I say, well, that's nothing but something from Vietnam. I recognize that dish, except they called it, you know, Mother's Favorite Saturday, whatever it was. But it had all of these Vietnamese combinations in it. And I realize that we are accepting various kinds of tastes, and that the tastes are mixing up and doing things. And I thought, well, surely someone has come upon some combinations that are either new to them, or you might even have thought of some of your own, because this kind of cooking is exceedingly easy. You only have to have four different things, maybe a pasta, and then you have a sauce that binds all of that together, and then some basic ingredients, which could be meat of some sort or vegetables of some sort, and chop them up to the right size, you know, or chicken, shrimp, or Italian sausage or things like that, and then some sort of a topping, breadcrumbs, nuts, flax seeds, or whole grain cereals and things as a topping, and then that all bakes. And when it's done, you kind of crunch down through all of that and get into the sauce and the flavors, and you have a good meal. All you need is a little bread and some green salad, and you got a meal.
Mm-hmm.
This idea did come to me when I just recently created, with the help of a friend, a recipe for moussaka. And all of a sudden, I was doing something different than I had done before in any moussaka recipe. And one of the additions was that the sauce that I made was much creamier and much more exotic because it contained ricotta cheese instead of not, you know, instead of just a white sauce that you sort of pour over and it becomes library paste and whatever it is. This had ricotta and some flavorings in it. And all of a sudden, it was just an absolute delight. And I thought, well, that's really the secret of all of these possibilities. And then I ran into one where the sauce was made of cream cheese and jarred cooked red peppers.
Uh-huh.
And you see, that's a totally different kind of sauce from one of the French mother sauces that you sort of mess around. Though those, I don't mean to deride those, but there are so many possibilities that you can make of a sauce mixture that adds a character or something to it. And I thought maybe people have discovered that, or it's not my invention. So I'm sure that they could have discovered it as well.
Okay. Well, I think we got. I need to talk to my director here because if we have some calls, I'm not seeing them on my side here, and maybe we need to get the control unit switched over to this studio because we do have calls, and you show them over there because I got nothing over here on my side. Okay, well, we'll get it squared away here in a second. And we're talking here with Duell Moore, and we do this every Wednesday on the show. If you have a recipe to share or just like to chat, you can certainly do that. Pick up the telephone and give us a call. Here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, the number 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that one is good any place that you can hear us around Illinois and Indiana, and that is 800-222-9455. So here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free 800-222-9455. And folks who are listening here, we definitely want to talk with you. Just have to bear with us, and maybe we got some small problem. As soon as we get that figured out, we will start talking with people. What you want to, you've talked a little bit about examples of what it is that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You have something else you might offer as a this is kind of what I got in mind sort of thing?
Well, yeah, I have some recipe ideas and things that seem kind of worth paying attention to. You were saying that you enjoyed the use of Asian tastes.
Okay, now I think we're getting squared away here. I'm not really sure what the problem was. Maybe we better go ahead and chat because I think we seem to be having a problem with our phones this morning, and I'm not really sure what's going on.
You said that you were enjoying the idea of eating with more Asian noodles and using
right.
those instead of spaghetti and whole wheat spaghetti and things like that. There's a very good recipe for a baked sesame chicken noodles, and those can be regular spaghetti, but you can also use the Chinese noodles for it, which is kind of good. And it uses noodles, about 8 ounces uncooked, and a tablespoon of dark sesame oil. That's the toasted sesame oil, the brown, and not the hot one, but the regular one. And a cup of red bell pepper strips and 8 ounces of shiitake mushrooms, the fresh ones, or you could get the dry ones and you know how to put those in water mm-hmm. for about 30 minutes and only slice the caps. And then boneless chicken breasts cut into half-inch pieces so that they're a good size. See, those are small pieces, so they would have been picked up by chopsticks was the original intention. Then it uses the things that you would recognize, a teaspoon of minced fresh ginger, and so about three garlic cloves that are minced up, and a fourth of a cup of soy sauce, and then one cup of chicken broth. I like the sauces that are used in the Oriental in noodles cooking, because they are thinned down with chicken broth, but they have all the other things with them, the soy sauce and vinegars and sesame oil and things like that. Mm-hmm. But they're thinned down with chicken broth, so that's how that's used. And since this is going to be stir-fried, there's a tablespoon of cornstarch and some cream sherry and rice vinegar, red pepper, and then for the greens, about 2 cups of sliced bok choy and some green onions, and then some sesame seeds that you will go ahead and toast. Then the use of those good Japanese breadcrumbs, the panko, P-A-N-K-O, they're a little coarser than the fine ones, and butter. And that's all that it takes. You cook the pasta, and then you combine the broth and the cornstarch and stir it with a whisk, and add the broth mixture to the pan that you've got. You've got the bell peppers and chicken and ginger and garlic, and you saute all of that, and then you stir in the soy sauce. Then you put this thickened broth on top of it and cook it for about 2 minutes. And remove it from the heat and stir in the sherry vinegar and crushed red pepper and the pasta and mix it all up and toss it and spoon it into a baking dish and then cover with those breadcrumbs so that you get this crust. It's one of the things I said you really need is a topping of some sort. And spray it with cooking spray or put in some butter if you want. Or some folks like to mix the butter with the breadcrumbs so that they kind of have a paste. And that way you don't have to dot it with butter. It's sort of a crust that you'd form over it. And bake it in a 400. Yes, that's hotter than generally. 400 oven will brown the crust quite well and warm up the rest of it, but you only have it in there for 20 minutes. So it's not like baking for an hour at 350, but you bake it for 20 minutes at 200 mm-hmm. or 400. So that's it. I mean, as I said first, you have some things, a pasta and a sauce and some extra stuff, and you just mix those together as you're doing it. That's why you could invent a lot of things. I don't want to say leftovers, but right now I'm enjoying a nice chunk of ham and looking for ways to keep that ham going because it is so good. It's a honey baked spiral sliced ham. Mm-hmm. And that just you just stretch that out and enjoy it so much. But you see, that would be easy I'm making this up. But it does exist in a form or another. I would cut the ham in reasonable pieces. I wouldn't shred it. I'd cut it in reasonable pieces. And I would mix it with thinly sliced potatoes. So you have potatoes and ham that are about the same size and shape. Then you need some sort of sauce. Now, of course, you could reach for Campbell's mushroom sauce, you could, or you could make a sauce that maybe has cheese in the sauce, as well as cheese sprinkled over this, and then again a crust on the top of breadcrumbs. Or I've always been interested in creating a dish with crushed potato chips. It seems to me like potato chips would take up a little bit of the moisture and would have a taste to them that would be different from just another dry cereal or something like that. But I've never found a crushed potato chip recipe. I'm still looking. I know there must be one because it's too reasonable a thing to use, but I have never seen it in looking at all the stuff I've looked at. And I would, bake that. And I think most of these dishes want to be in something that's about 2.5 to 3 inches deep. A gratin is done on a real flat plate, And it's good, and generally it's something that puffs up and stays brown on top. But this wants to sort of sit down in a dish that has some character to it, size anyway.
Well, I think we got our caller problem here worked out. We have some people who'd like to talk with us, so let's do that. We'll start with a caller in Urbana and line number one right here. Hi.
Yeah. I just wanted to share a recipe with you that has sort of a Mexican theme to it, although I think the same theme, same idea can be applied to other ethnic cooking from other
areas.
Yes,
exactly.
The thing that we do a lot is to, this is sort of a weekday meal, is to take some ground beef and cook it in the pan that we're going to use, the one dish. The pan itself is called a casserole, although we don't think of this as a casserole.
See what I mean? Good.
And you cook it and break it up as you're cooking it. And by the way, one of the best devices we've ever found for cooking ground beef is what you would use to in a large industrial scale meat grinder to poke the meat down into the grinder, a wooden device. Or something like that.
Yes.
We bought one of those at a restaurant supply place, and that's what we use to break up the ground beef.
Is it wedge-shaped?
It's a cylindrical, more or less, with a big handle on it.
Yes. Okay. I was thinking of one that comes to a wedge, but
round. This one is just cylindrical.
Round. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Good.
And the bottom of it is what smashes out the ground beef as you cook it, so that you're always exposing uncooked ground beef to a hot surface of
exactly.
the pan as you pound it with this thing. And anyway, once you've got the beef cooked, and you do need to get it cooked, I think, before you put it in the oven, that you do this on the surface of the surface unit of the stove.
Yes.
And I guess the seasoning can vary, but if it's Mexican, it has to have garlic, cumin, and oregano. And beyond that, you can put in hot peppers if that's what you like. And the original recipe we had called for olives and raisins to be put in.
Oh, that sounds good.
Olives
and raisins.
Like that.
Olives and raisins would want to be more in a Moroccan dish where you have cinamon and allspice.
That's right. That's
yes.
what I was thinking.
Yes.
Yeah, that, and that's why I'm saying that there are variations on this you could use to make it more Arabic. You would want to use cinnamon and mint.
Yes.
Instead of the Mexican flavoring. And I suppose if you wanted to do it Mexican, you could do it. Another variation would be to use ground chicken or ground fowl of some sort, turkey.
Turkey, yes.
And then maybe you would want to put in your chocolate for the mole poblano flavoring.
Yes, at the end. Uh-huh.
But at any rate, once you've got that, whatever the meat part is done on the bottom, you kind of smooth out the top of that. And then you pour in a batter either made with cornmeal or with some sort of a bread batter made with cornmeal or with corn masa. Now I don't know whether this disqualifies it as a one-dish meal because you have to have a separate bowl that you mix your batter up in.
Oh, no, that's okay. You can mix it in anything. It's just the fact you pop it in the oven and you take it out.
You put it in the oven and it all bakes together, and so you've got this stratified layer thing of two layers it's not just a crust, it's a bread layer of some sort.
It would swell up, it would rise, yes.
It rises and bakes, and it's a real bread.
Yes.
On top, and then when you spoon into it, everybody gets, you know, the meat on the bottom and the bread on top, and you've got the whole thing right there on your plate, and what we usually do is then put a little bit of shredded lettuce on the top of it. So.
Do you have any tomatoes in this?
Yes, you can put tomatoes in, or you can leave them out, and I guess, again, if I were making a kind of a tagine or something like that, I would go with the tomatoes and possibly go with a wheat bread, wheat flour stuffed bread thing on top.
See, you've got enough recipes here with one or two ingredients that you can sit and make a different meal every time.
That's right. Well, I mean, you can do all
exactly.
the variations on it, but the important thing here, I mean, the thing that characterizes this is, you know, meat on the bottom with
yes.
or without cooked vegetables.
Yes.
And bread on top.
And bread on top. Now, how hot is the oven?
Usually 350 to 375.
50 to 75. And how long do you bake it? Well, until
probably half hour, 45 minutes, something like that.
That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
Yes, 45 minutes I'm going to put down. That's good. Well, that that is pretty direct, and like you say, See, the difference between what I'm afraid that some people would do, I call garbage cooking, like, oh, just throw anything in. No, you've aimed it at a Mexican taste, yeah, or you've aimed it at a Moroccan taste, or you see, you could even do that with the noodles that I just recommended,
right,
and have some Asian tastes that ginger and soy sauce.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a real sauce. There's not a real sauce in this. This is meat and bread. And
well, so, to the extent that there is, it kind of runs through.
Well, it soups up a little bit. Yes,
right,
but I mean you don't make a.
But I think what you want is for the bread to come out as bread. You don't want that sauce. That's why you put the batter on top, so that it won't get suck up that juice and sauce or get it incorporated into the bread.
Well, that's good. That's exactly what I'm looking for.
Okay.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, bye.
Our guest this morning here in this part of Focus 580, the man we like to call our chef in residence, his name is Doyle Moore. And I'd like to point something out. This is a purely honorary title, ladies and gentlemen. It's like an honorary degree.
It's an honorary title.
It's an honorary title, and but there's nothing reticent. I also would like to point out that it's not chef in reticence, because there's nothing reticent about this man. I've known him for a while, and not him. Anyway, once a month here on the program on a Wednesday, first Wednesday of the month, we talk about cooking and always have a good time exchanging stories and recipes. And his thought this time around was he's interested in one-dish meals, things that primarily bake in the oven. He's looking for things that are maybe a little unusual. Maybe you found something recently that is new, you think is good, or perhaps it's just something that you make in your house, but it's not one of the ordinary sort of garden variety casserole type items. Even if you want to call it a casserole, it's okay. You can use that word. We're just sort of staying away from it.
Well, as I'd said, when you say casserole, you sort of have a preconceived idea of all of that stuff from the 50s. And I know now this dish, the way that the fellow just had described it, is a totally different way of cooking that, you see. Mm. And that's what I'm thinking is happening.
Okay. Well, let's talk with somebody else.
Yes.
In Chicago, line 4. Hello.
Hello. I'm sorry. I'm a little bit off this topic. I wanted Doyle's opinion because I just found this magazine called Cooks Illustrated, which I've never seen before. And it was fascinating because they take one recipe and it seems like they give it to a cook and she tries to perfect it and she explains her reasoning and why things didn't work and then gives the recipe.
Yes, because that is a very experimental magazine, and we were just the words are still on our lips because David had mentioned that he had some information from Cooks Illustrated. And what's the television show that they are?
It's called Recipes from America's Test Kitchen.
America's Test Kitchen.
And it's running on a lot of public TV stations, and we're running it. And it's the same folks, and it's that same approach where they take a dish and they try to understand what makes it work and what's the best possible way of all the variations of doing it, and they test several ways, and then all of their people get together, and everybody tastes it, and I think it's a really lovely magazine. I think you can learn a lot, and that they have good recipes. They also now have a book out that's a companion to their TV show that has a lot of recipes in it, and I think that's what it's called, Recipes from America's Test Kitchen, something like that.
That was basically my question, because if you don't, it seems like it just cuts years off of cooking experience to use this book and this magazine. And I just wanted to know, has anyone tried the recipes, and are they good?
Yes, they are good. And you see, they're kind of what I'm talking about today. We've learned so much about extending ourselves into other taste areas. And we have learned so many varieties of how to cook, whether it's roast or dry roast or braised or all of those techniques. You used to just have this slavish recipe, you know, mama did it this way. Of course, mama also had to build the fire and everything else that went into baking and cooking and all. And it was tedious, and so things were pretty limited to your own folk environment, and we've gone way beyond that and have included a lot of new techniques. And it is the exploration of these techniques that are new to us that give us an exciting impetus to cook different things. And so the recipes that you're talking about are recipes that have gone through that kind of process. They've come from other sources, and they are altered to be possible for people to make them not from the original source, but in a new way that is possible for somebody to cook. So the recipes are well thought out and probably just a little inventive, which is, you know, like we're talking about today, that you are able to say, well, gee, look what I did, or look what I could do, or I recognize this as a form, but not quite all these things, and I could put other things in it and change the form. So, yes, pay attention to them, because that's a rather significant source of good cooking information is Cook's Illustrated.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the call. I think also
speak to the fact that I knew one of the editors of the original Cook's Illustrated, which was many years ago, and she now lives in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and that's where, when I go to Cheyenne, my sister and I sort of play with her, and we do some test cooking and some sort of fun like that. I look at all of her books. She's the one that did the books on the spirit of the West and the spirit of, let's see, the spirit of the Earth and the spirit of the West. Mm-hmm. And those all had to be tested. So, I mean, she was even following her own old advice. So,
and if people are interested, not only can you go and find the magazine on the newsstand, but they do have a number of books, collections of recipes, general collections. And then there's one that's all quick recipes, and there's one that's Italian recipes, and there's one that's all vegetable recipes. And so if you could go to the bookstore, go to the library, and take a look at them, and you might like their approach. I think also one of the things that they do is really nice is that they test, at least their tasters do comparison tests. They go out and buy 8 different kinds of olive oil.
Oh, yes.
Or 8 different brands of canned tomatoes.
Yes.
Or 8 different brands of red wine vinegar or something, and they taste them all side by side, something that most people never do, and then tell which one they think is the best and why it is that they like that particular brand. And it's interesting. I think when Celeste talked with a fellow who was one of the editors of this book, he talked about the fact that he was surprised when they did the red wine vinegar test, because he found out that in a blind testing that the one that he used at home and used all the time and thought was perfectly fine turned out to be the worst.
Yes.
And that he discovered that even he, in tasting all these vinegars, there was another kind that actually he thought was better. And when he saw the results, he thought, well, this one that's not recommended, this is the one I use, and I've been using it for years. So
I think I know the name of the bottle.
Yeah. I think their recommended was, I think it was Pompeii that came out on top. And the one that was it's the same one that we use in our house, was the one that was not recommended on their list. And I sort of thought, well, it seemed okay to me. I don't know. But you can't, when you taste it, when you do an A-B comparison like that, it's a different
Now you have some impetus to go find one of those vinegars and then use it and see, well, yes, this is going to be a difference.
Yeah.
That's good.
Well, my apologies. I was yammering on here, and one of our callers just got tired of listening to me, I guess, and decided, well, I'm going to hang up. So my apologies. If there are other folks who would like to call in, we certainly have time for calls. We'd be very happy to hear from folks. 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere you can hear us, 800-222-9455. And this is our monthly program on cooking. And Doyle's thought was he's interested in one-dish meals, things that you put together, put in one dish, and then you put them in the oven, and then you pull that dish out, and that's it. Things that you maybe have cooked in your house and thought were good. Maybe it's something new that you've come across here. But it's a sort of a new approach to the old idea of the hot dish, which a lot of us grew up on, but might have involved such elements as cream of mushroom soup and those fried onions that you put on
well,
the top.
Those are good, yes.
333-9455, and that's toll-free, 800-222-9455. And I think we do have another caller here ready to go on our line number one, calling from West Champaign. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
This is not in the oven. It's on top of the stove.
Good.
And I absolutely have to rave about Cooking Light, and especially their hardback collection of super fast suppers.
Oh, yes.
For those of us that both parties work and have to throw something together when we get home and not feeling exhausted.
And those recipes are very thorough, and they don't look like something that you've just thrown together, despite the fact that you do. And this is the quality of what I'm talking about. We've changed our whole approach to cooking. Thanks to Julia, I will still give her
credit. And as someone who is diabetic and watches sodium, they also have the wonderful thing of doing most of my arithmetic for me.
Yes.
But I think my probable absolute favorite of theirs is a package of refrigerated tortellinis or raviolis.
I was just going to mention that.
With a package of baby spinach.
Yes.
About a quarter of to a third of a cup of chicken stock, garlic, fresh garlic, and crushed red pepper to taste. And you cook the tortellinis separately in a pot of water.
Yes.
Almost done, al dente. And saute the garlic and red pepper in a wee bit of olive oil.
Uh-huh.
And at the very end, you drain the pasta and just wilt the spinach in with the garlic and tomato, and then toss in the tortellini, and you eat.
So it's all done in a sauté pan,
mm-hmm.
and on top of the stove. Well,
right.
you've done the same thing, and you've involved the same ingredients, and you've done it in another method of cooking. That's absolutely wonderful. But that was from Cooking Light.
Mm-hmm.
They are good. I'm very fond of Cooking Light.
He has a copy right in front of him right now.
Which one, this month?
Yeah, this month, yes. And if you turn to page from 144, to page 224, you'll find Easy Ravioli Bake, which is exactly what you've just described, only using raviolis instead of tortellinis.
This was probably last year's, in the fall or summer sometime.
Probably the fall
and
early spring.
You can also add cherry tomatoes to that, or grape tomatoes.
Oh, yes. You wouldn't even have to slice them,
yeah.
The little baby ones.
Yeah.
Gosh, they are so good. Those grape tomatoes are really tasty.
They're the only ones that taste like tomatoes when it's not.
Yes. I mean, cherry tomatoes, you taste them and there's no taste there. But those little grape tomatoes, you can just sit and eat them like candy. I like it.
The Santa sweets, yeah.
Yes. Oh, well, thank you very much. This is good.
And I agree with the Thai and the rice noodles and the tantaboon. They're good for other things besides pad Thai.
Yes.
And amazingly enough, we've found in World Harvest the little Thai soup noodles, which are set up in packages, like the ramen noodles that folks eat.
Oh, yes.
Have thousands of milligrams of sodium in them.
Yes.
The Thai noodle packs have 450 milligrams of sodium.
Oh, my, that's nothing.
Serving,
yeah.
Compared to the 1,000,
yes.
Some odd milligrams,
yes,
of sodium in the ramen.
And now, what are those noodles called again?
They're various kinds of rice sticks, and they're, you can find them most easily at AMCO,
yes,
on Springfield, and they're called different things according to their thickness. There are very wide ones. There are ones that are about a quarter of an inch wide are called chantaboon.
Mm-hmm.
The general name for rice stick noodles is bon pho. We have a restaurant here in town down University that's called that. And they vary in thickness according to what you want to do with them.
Now, these are rice noodles.
Rice noodles,
yes.
And Thai Kitchen, who has brought us so many of their wonderful tastes here to America.
Oh, yes.
World Harvest and Meyer, which have brought us so many of our cross-cut culture flavors right here in Champaign.
Absolutely.
Urbana has these wonderful little just-add-water packets from Thai Kitchen, and you can get them easily at World Harvest. Thai Kitchen instant rice noodle soup in 3 minutes.
Oh, boy.
there you are, David. In my hot little hand is a spring onion. And it's, for those of us that watch carbohydrates, there's about 2 carbohydrates per packet.
That's good.
And 400 milligrams of sodium. And they're yummy. And you can add things to it, you pieces of leftovers and stuff. And they're pretty yummy, but they don't clout you over the head with enough sodium for 3 days.
Yes, yeah. Yes. That's good. Well, thank you very much.
Well, sure. Have a good day.
Okay. Yes, indeed. You. Goodness.
Okay, let's go on here. We can go back. I think this is our Gibson City caller here, line number 2. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yeah. Hi.
Yes, well, my recipe is just it's a quick day recipe when you're really busy. And when my kids were teenagers, I made it. It was taco or tortilla pie, and I made it with meat. But now I have a vegetarian daughter, and so I kind of redid the recipe, and I used 8-inch tortillas.
Eight-inch tortillas, yes.
In an 8-inch cake pan, round cake pan.
Oh.
And it's a quick day because I use canned stuff. Like it on a busy day because I take a can of kidney beans, and if they don't have the chili sauce already in it, I put my own chili powder in there, and
Okay. Bearing
to your taste. And I mix it up with a can of refried bean, usually fat-free for our family. And like I said, it's your choice. And I mix those together, and I add measure anymore, but probably a fourth to a third of a cup of salsa.
Salsa, yes.
And again, it's to your taste, you know, mild, medium, or hot, depending on your family. And I take these, and then cheese, whatever cheese your choice is, and whatever I happen to have on hand. That's why it's a nice, quick meal.
Uh-huh.
I put a little bit of the taco sauce on the bottom. Well, I spray the pan. A little bit of the salsa on the bottom, and then one of my tortillas.
Yes.
And I make 3 layers of tortilla, the bean mixture, and the cheese.
And the cheese is on top of the beans, and then you put another tortilla.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And the cheese, I use, like I said, whatever I have on hand. If I have sliced cheese, until it's covered. If I have the already shredded cheese, I put it till it covers pretty much the whole round, you know, pan, and I do 3 layers with one on top. In the top layer, I put some salsa so the tortilla doesn't dry out.
Uh-huh.
And depending on your oven, my oven right now that I have, I do not like, but I guess I would bake it at 375 for half an hour.
375, yes.
To 45 minutes until it's nice and bubbly. And then I usually serve it with a salad.
And then you just cut it like pie pieces?
Yeah, pie pieces. In fact, I had it last night, and that's why I decided to call in.
Oh, great. Good for you.
Yeah, there was 4 adults, and actually it was 4 pieces because
that's a good chunk, yes.
Yeah, and I said make my quarter a little bit smaller, so somebody got a little bit bigger piece.
Well, I think your invention of using an 8-inch tortilla in an 8-inch cake pan is brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
That I mean, because I've known about these tortas that are piled up and uh-huh. they're falling apart on the side, or they don't have things clear up to the edge. You feel like you're kind of getting cheated, and then they're just sort of out naked, you know. But yeah. in a cake pan that will keep the sides and everything all out. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and there's enough liquid so it doesn't dry out.
Uh-huh.
It's a nice cut. Well, you should set it maybe 5-10 minutes before you actually cut it so it doesn't get too runny.
Oh, I see. Yes, it would settle back down.
Kind of like lasagna. You wait a little bit so it firms up.
You know, that is very much like a lasagna form, isn't
it?
Yes.
It is.
How great. Do you use whole wheat tortillas ever?
You know, again, it's one of those dishes I use whatever I have on hand. It just doesn't have to be 8 inches.
You just as long as it's 8 inches.
Yes. Well,
I can see there you there with your kitchen shears trimming those 10-inch ones down.
Oh, yeah. No, I haven't done that.
Well, thank you very much. That's wonderful.
Oh, you're welcome. Uh-huh. And enjoy listening to you when you're on.
Well, thank you.
Well, thanks.
Bye-bye now.
We have about 15 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. It's our monthly cooking program with the man we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. He is here once a month on the first Wednesday in the 10 o'clock hour. We pick something different. And when I say we, I mean he picks something different to talk about every time. And we always have a good time and exchange recipes and cooking tips and stories. And it's always a lot of fun. And his thought this time around was he's looking for novel one dish meals that bake in the oven, going beyond some of the traditional casseroles that we might have had when we were growing up. Eschew the canned tuna and the cream mushroom soup, but you know, maybe something that is different, more interesting, has different taste, maybe something that you've discovered, maybe something you've been doing for a long time. But he's always on the lookout for new recipes, and maybe you have one to share. 333-9455. That's for Champaign Urbana, and toll-free 800-222-9455.
Another combination you could think of baking, it would be fresh mushrooms and rigatoni with a sauce. I mean, it's again that mixture. Something pasta, something a sauce, and something added, and then a crust on the top. And that's our rule of thumb for what it takes for one of these dishes. You might start with mushrooms, some shiitake mushrooms, and some cremini mushrooms sliced up. You slice all those up, and some shallots, and then put in some thyme, salt, and pepper, and saute all of that until the mushrooms are cooked. So you've got the onions and the mushrooms and thyme. It doesn't take a lot of extra spices. And then you want to make the sauce, so you use heated milk, and you can make a sauce by just whisking in flour to heated milk, and it will thicken up just right. You don't have to start with a roux. This is just flour put into milk, but you have to keep stirring it so that it breaks up. And then add cheese, and a suggestion would be a nice, a full, rich cup of Italian Asiago.
Hmm.
That's kind of the, ooh, I hadn't thought of that. Whatever happened to old Swiss cheese and other things like that? But an Asiago cheese against the mushrooms and the radiator pasta.
Oh, okay.
And that one. And then put all of the pasta and mushroom mixture into the cheese mixture and put that into a baking dish and cook that at 375 for 30 minutes. You've sprinkled the cheese over it. It'll be the crust will be the cheese. And for about 30 minutes, and then see, the only flavor with that is thyme, and then this velvety Asiago cheese that will melt into it. And it's very, very rich. A very rich cheese. I think I had mentioned to you that I had just made a sauce that was enriched with cheese, but it was ricotta cheese, and so it wasn't so bold. But oh, was it creamy? And it was the ideal cream sauce. I was quite pleased with it because it just used regular skim milk, but a cup of ricotta really did boost this sauce up, and I was very pleased with that. That's really what got me started thinking about this subject matter.
Let's talk with someone else in Danville. Line 4, hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned you were interested in chips, but how about tortilla chips?
Well, now, tortilla chips would be good because they wouldn't fall apart.
Well, are you familiar with the Quick Cooking magazine?
No.
Well,
Quick Cooking.
Yes,
no, I don't know.
It's the Ryman Publications out of Wisconsin.
Okay.
I had a recipe in it for the March, April.
Yes.
And looking through it, I found this recipe on a nacho pie.
Oh, that sounds good.
It's made with ground beef, chopped onions, a can of 8-ounce tomato sauce.
Sauce, yes.
Taco seasoning, and a tube of crescent rolls, 8-ounce crescent rolls.
Oh.
You take 1.5 cups of crushed nacho chips, divide them, a cup of 8-ounce sour cream, and a cup of, or 4 ounces of Mexican cheese or cheddar cheese.
Yes, sour cream.
In a large skillet, you cook the beef and onions until it's done. Stir in the tomato sauce and taco seasoning. Bring to a boil. Reduce heat and simmer for about 5 minutes. Separate the crescent dough into 8 triangles.
Oh, yes.
Place in a greased 8-inch or 9-inch pie pan with points towards the center. Press into the bottom and up the sides to form a crust.
Oh, yes.
And then seal the perforations. Sprinkle 1 cup of chips over the crust. Top with the meat mixture. Spread sour cream over meat mixture. Sprinkle with cheese and remaining chips. And bake at 350 for about 20 to 25 minutes or until cheese is melted and the crust is brown.
350 at 25 minutes.
Right.
Well, you've just invented a new pie there, haven't you?
Well, it's not my invention. It's a lady from Nebraska who thought up the idea. My idea is on carrots, but I'm not going to bother you with it right now. So I'll give somebody else a chance, and thank you. I really enjoy listening to
you. Well, I'm glad you called in, because that's a very good recipe, and that's the kind of invention that I'm impressed with, is that you know, the idea of taking crescent rolls.
I'm getting ready to come over to Champaign to move over there. And
yes.
Getting rid of everything, I found a book from about the 40s on using Jell-O.
Oh, good. That was last month.
Right, but I'm going to try to find that book and have it handy.
Oh, good for you.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. We have time probably for one or at least one, maybe two calls. Somebody wants to call real quick. We're coming back down to about our last 5 minutes on the show. Anything else you want to mention?
Well, just other variations of what you can cook up. I was interested in the fact that instead of making sauces and making pasta and then saucing the pasta and eating it that way, it is possible to cook all of this at once and then put it in. Well, you'd cook the spaghetti, but then you would make a simple sauce: Italian sausage, chopped onions, green bell peppers, and cloves of garlic, and then tomatoes and maybe some olives and tomato paste and capers and anchovy paste, and you've got that marvelous puttanesca sauce. And then you mix the noodles with the pasta that you've done that, and stir them around for about 5 minutes, and put all of that into a baking dish, and sprinkle it with cheese so that you have a crust on the top again. And that's sort of, I don't know, I don't think it takes the fun away from having what I used to call raw spaghetti. Mother never ever served spaghetti without it having been run through some sort of pink stuff that she would make, and they were all broken up. Everything was all broken up. And that wasn't that really wasn't for children. That was the way that you did it in those days, because we did not have the influence of an Italian neighbor that said, "Oh no, leave the spaghetti long and whole." And then because somehow in the Midwest we thought that was messy to drool it with your fork, and no one knew how to twirl it in a spoon, and that's all phony anyway. So in the 30s it was a totally different technique of doing spaghetti and such things as that, but we did it. The idea that it's already cooked and then you could bake it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you've given us some good ideas. Maybe people will immediately rush to their kitchen and start some of these things. Well, I'm still thinking about Asian noodles. And maybe we should do a show on Asian noodle dishes.
How about next month?
We could.
Asian noodles.
Next month would be April. Mrs. Inge the other day, I'd made her pad thai a couple of times. And so I don't know where this came from, but she says, maybe we should have some soba. And I'm thinking,
oh, yes, soba? yes.
You
want
to have buckwheat noodles? I'm not sure I've ever even eaten soba.
Oh, they are wonderful. I've even made them, believe it or not.
Oh, you mean from scratch?
Yes, buckwheat noodles. Yes, soba. Oh, good. We'll talk about. Oh, I go. Yes, yum yum. Why can't we just stay here until next month?
Well, we could take another 2 minutes. Tell me what your favorite thing to do with soba.
I do like it with the soba sauce. I mean, which is a sauce that is a thin dipping sauce, very thin. Soy sauce, oil, some chopped onions, green onions, and not slices, but grated ginger. Let's see, ginger and no garlic in that. Ginger and onions and soy sauce and sesame oil. And that makes – or you buy Mimi sauce, you pour water in it and you have that. But you have to have a special little cup, and the noodles are cooked and put out on a plate or something that are – and it's cooled. They're cooled. And you dip them into this big – dipping sauce and eat them up. Yeah. But they're really nutty, and a taste. I'm very fond of buckwheat noodles. They're hard to make because the buckwheat flour that we get here, I have to sift it and get some of the thick crumbs out of it, the husks and all, and it makes it a little difficult. I've also found that using that and then adding regular flour, I haven't tried adding rice flour, but adding just regular flour to the buckwheat flour and one egg. And then I make it like I'm making a pasta and then run it through. That works quite well. It's a little more fragile than buying the buckwheat noodles already made, but the making of buckwheat noodles is a great art in Japan, I know, and they the way they roll it out and then fold it up and then slice it, and they're all absolutely perfect, and there it is, fresh soba noodles.
Okay, well, next time.
Next
we'll
time.
We'll talk about Asian noodles.
I won't have to worry this month about
what
we're going to talk about.
I don't
want
you losing any sleep over the time. Thank you very much.
Yes, I've enjoyed all of it. And people really were helpful in these recipes that I've been wondering about. And they all work. All and right. they are as varied as I know that cooking can be.
Doyle Moore, the man we call our chef in residence here every month, first Wednesday, 10 o'clock. We talk about cooking. He'll be back next month. The show is made possible by Grant from the Brown Bag Deli Restaurant, Homemade Pies by Inge, Gourmet Foods, Cards and Gifts, as well as Creative Crafts, Zimmer Art Gallery, Wacky Nackies, the Bean Scene Cafe, Prairie Fire Glass, all housed in the same buildings in downtown Monticello. The program is also made possible with a grant from the Art Mart in the Lincoln Square Mall, Urbana. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio in East Central Illinois. We're going to break. We'll have more after the news from NPR and an update.